Edwina Farley with you. Over the next few days, we'll start to learn what countries are willing to commit to when it comes to tackling climate change. As talks in Paris wrap up today, the wish list from rural Australia.
I'd like to see the farming community being seen as part of the solution, so that being asked to the table on how we might provide the food, because climate change falls worse on the poor of this planet. I think we as farming community probably have a fair few answers on how to do things.
And why a 150-year-old line on a map is telling its own story on climate change. Kath McAloon has the latest rural news wrap for us for this week. And Kath, some really interesting research compiled by the Business Council of Australia on a whole range of things, but particularly foreign investment changes.
The council is calling on the government to reverse its foreign investment changes, or it says it will risk losing investors in the agriculture and food sectors. So some tough new regulations came into force this week, with foreign people wanting to invest in Australian farmland, foreigners wanting to invest now facing huge fees. So once they reach a set threshold, investors are hit with a non-refundable fee of $100,000 to apply to buy a farm worth $10 million. And this doesn't apply to investments in other sectors, which is something that people have been a bit critical of. And the Business Council says that tightening scrutiny of farm and agribusiness sales, as well as these new application fees, will actively discourage foreign investment. The council's agriculture and food chair is Alison Watkins, who you might remember was actually the head of GrainCorp when that controversial takeover bid by American company ADM was rejected by the then Treasurer Joe Hockey. And Ms. Watkins says the government's foreign investment regime is really disappointing.
The consequences of this will become apparent over a period of time, and it is well understood that agriculture and agri-food more broadly does need investment, and I think there will be plenty more examples where in a practical sense this is impeding that investment, and that does concern us.
Now, we're going to be talking a lot about climate change talks in Paris later in the program, but Australia's already ruled something out.
One of the things that came up at the Paris climate talks during the week was an idea of phasing out fossil fuel subsidies, with New Zealand actually proposing a communique on countries signing up to phase out subsidies on fossil fuels. Now, when this was raised, the National Party was quite concerned, and they condemned this communique, saying that it could threaten the diesel fuel rebate that's paid to farmers, fishers and miners. So while 40 countries did sign on to the communique, Australia said it wouldn't be signing it, and Agriculture Minister Barnaby Joyce says the case for the Australian rebate is different.
The only reason you get a rebate is because you don't use your piece of plant, your tractor, on a public road. And the only reason you pay the charge is because of heavy usage on a road. If you're not using a piece of plant or mining plant on a public road, why should you pay a public road charge?
Some new efforts in Queensland to try to mandate the amount of ethanol in fuel.
Yeah, Queensland seems to be sort of leading the country on mandating on the use of biofuels, and it's good news for the state's sugar and grain industries, who are expected to benefit from legislation which passed Queensland Parliament this week, that from 2017, 30% of all petrol sales in the state will have to come from ethanol blended fuel. So the laws will introduce an initial 3% ethanol mandate for regular petrol and 0.5% mandate for biodiesel. Queensland has two biofuel refineries. The Serena plant in the state's north uses sugar, while the Dalby plant processes grain, and those industries have welcomed this news. The state's energy minister, Mark Bailey, says the mandates will be good for the state and will also help grow the industry.
Not only will we see an increase in capacity in both Serena and also Dalby, I think we'll see new proponents and we'll see new plants as well. I think we'll see some considerable growth, but to do that, you've got to have a bigger marketplace. And that's what we're seeking here, bigger marketplace, more investment, more jobs. That's where we've got to go.
Bad news for my Christmas fruit platter.
Mangoes will be more expensive and they'll be harder to come by. It's been a pretty tough spring in a lot of the nation's big sort of fruit growing regions, with some really intense supercell storms causing a lot of damage for fruit production. And the national mango crop hasn't been spared. The crop forecast has been revised down nearly a million trays after storms lashed some of the growing regions. Damage to orchards in the Northern Territory and North Queensland has reduced the crop, and there's also been the crop in WA is about half of what it would normally be because of some bad weather conditions over there. So they're now expecting about 7.2 million trays of mangoes to be produced, which is well below last year's record 9.5 million trays. And Peter Lafleur is a mango farmer south of Townsville. He lost up to half his crop in just half an hour when heavy rain and winds hit his farm just a few weeks ago.
It looked like someone had just shaken the trees and the mangoes all fell on the ground. It's going to have a flow-on effect to the rest of the community because we won't need as many packers in the shed, the pickers won't make as much money, there won't be as much freight.
And a similar thing happened to macadamia growers as well.
Yeah, in northern New South Wales, just last weekend, a big storm ripped through local plantations. There were some large hailstones and heavy rain, as well as strong winds, which knocked some of the half-mature nuts to the ground, as well as uprooted some trees. And the Australian Macadamia Society's Jo Leon Burnett says that some growers could lose up to 80% of their 2016 crop.
That's the really disappointing thing, that almost regardless of how widespread the damage is, with worldwide demand the strongest it's ever been, and that being reflected in very firm prices, any loss of crop is just tragic at this point in time.
An extraordinary engineering project has come to an end between Darwin and the Browse Basin.
This is remarkable. The gas company INPEX has just finished building what is the longest subsea pipeline in the Southern Hemisphere, and it does connect Darwin to the Browse Basin off the Kimberley coastline. It stretches 890 kilometres.
That is amazing, isn't
it? It's huge, yeah. And it'll eventually transport gas to an LNG plant at Bladen Point, but that plant is still under construction. The general manager of INPEX, Sean Kildare, says that it took 18 months to lay this pipeline, and it's made up of 700,000 tonnes of steel.
The pipe itself is protected by about eight layers of corrosion-resistant membranes. Each section of the pipeline is covered by a concrete weight jacket, which keeps the pipeline on the seabed. So its completed construction weight on the seabed is actually about 1.2 million tonnes.
The mind boggles, really. A lovely story out of central west New South Wales about a community that's done, well, some lovely remembering of one of their own.
Yeah, a group of farmers and their mates in that region have surprised even themselves. They ranked in the top fundraisers in the Movember Challenge, which is, of course, that challenge which sees lots of Australian men growing a moustache in the month of November to raise awareness and to raise money for men's health. And this team raised more than $26,000 in memory of a good friend who committed suicide 20 years ago. Steve Kiss says the fundraiser was a really fitting tribute to his brother Sandy, who'd struggled with depression.
It's only a little community, you know, of 5,000 people is our roughly town population, but the rural community have gathered together, and it's sort of, you know, that's the strength of it, I think. We know the downfalls of country communities, so that's why I think we've all gathered together and rallied behind this.
Oh, it's a beautiful story. Kath, thank you.
Cheers, Edwina.
Kath McAloon with the week's Rural News. All those stories online at abc.net.au/rural.